sometimes you gotta think like a lady.
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 And act like a boss.
Welcome to Think Like a Lady. You can follow us on Twitter at @ThinkLikeALady_ or on Facebook at @ThinkLikeALadyPodcast, as well as on Instagram at @ThinkLikeALady_podcast. We're available to listen to on all the major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or just ask Amazon Alexa.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Think Like a Lady. This is Afroz.
And this is Dua.
Last week, we spoke about the quantum physics of Islam. This week, we're going to talk about what happens to your metabolism while you're fasting during Ramadan.
Yay, how exciting.
You know, this subject is actually right up my alley, Dua. You know why?
That's exactly why I picked it. I picked it just for you.
You know why, it's right up my alley. I literally have a degree in this stuff, so that's why I got super, super excited when I found out we were doing an episode about this and have, like, my notes written out. I had to, like, sit here, filter out what people did not need to know and what they do need to know. And, you know, I'm someone who does get into the weeds of the details a little bit too much, and I always find myself, like, stopping myself. Like, hey, you're not talking to people who do this as a profession. Right. Like, these are regular, normal, everyday people, and it's a talent to explain something complex in something that is understandable. So let's get started. You know, the question is, what happens to your metabolism while you fast during Ramadan, right? And fasting around the world is very different, right? Here in the United States, the more you're towards the southern states, your fasts average between 16 to 17 hours. The more north you go up and towards Canada, it can start touching like 19 hours. I know if it's really northern Canada, like, or like Alaska, it's like 21 hours. Norway is like 22, 23 hours.
Those were pretty long. Actually, those were the longest days I think I've ever had to fast. They were from, it was like we had to stop eating at like 4 or something. It was like 3:50, and then this was like a couple years back, but then we had to break fast at like almost 11. It was wild. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. I never did anything like that before.
It was totally wild. The luckiest people are those who live closer to the equator, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So let's get started. I think I have to lay some groundwork for this episode, for just so people understand some of the terminology here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys have heard the term carbs, right? Which is short for carbohydrate.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way I can explain to you of what carbohydrates are is a carb is basically a long chain of glucose molecules. And glucose is sugar, right? Like the sugar that you eat and put in your food and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what, like, one glucose molecule is considered a sugar. So technically, a carb is a long sugar chain.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand why people, when they say like someone has a high blood sugar, it's because the carbohydrate chain has like broken down and released itself as simple sugar molecules into the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, carbohydrates can also do the opposite. Instead of breaking down into simple sugar molecules, they can also, the carbohydrate chains can also link up and create this super chain called glycogen, right? And you can think of glycogen as like a carb reserve. So for like the sake of this episode, the word glycogen or glycogen stores and carb reserve all mean the same thing, right? And basically another thing I would like listeners to remember before I delve deep into this conversation is, think of your bloodstream as a super highway system of your body. You know, like the highway system that delivers all the essential nutrients to your organs, your muscles, your bones. You know, there's another highway system in our body, the lymphatic system, but we won't call it a super highway, and that's a separate subject. And the third and final thing that I think that is very important to this conversation is this hormone called insulin. You heard of it?
Of course.
So basically, insulin behaves different in each fasting state. So there's four fasting states, right? And the ultimate determinant of fat lipolysis, lipolysis meaning fat breakdown, proteolysis, which is protein breakdown, and glycogenolysis, which is, you know, glycogen, aka carb breakdown, is determined by this hormone called insulin. There's also, you know, three other hormones we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about glucagon, ghrelin, and leptin. So we'll get into that later. And, you know, just so, you know, our listeners understand, when it comes to your metabolism, there is a priority structure, right? So as a general rule, metabolic hormones such as insulin and glucagon are configured to use fat as the last resort of fat stores, like the fat stores in your muscles, in your adipose tissue meaning like the physical fat on your body, is it's meant to be used as a last resort of energy, right? And it will only use that once you deplete your glycogen stores or your carb reserves first. So that's like a very crucial thing to keep in mind during this conversation, right? So let's delve deep into this. So when it comes to fasting, right, like I said, your glycogen stores, aka your carb reserves, deplete first into a considerable ratio. And this ratio is heavily dependent on your diet and exercise and how much muscle you have, right? So I'll give you an example, Dua. Let's present a scenario of person A and person B who underwent a 17-hour fast, like here in San Diego. That, you know, during Ramadan, the fasting is about 17 hours. So let's say, you know, you have person A, who is someone who is on a low-carb and high-protein diet and has a lot of muscle mass, right? Person A's glycogen stores are still in the priority of perhaps a percentage of 50% carb glycogen burn and 50% fat burn. So what I mean by that is, because this person has a lot of muscle on them, this is, and they're eating a high protein diet, this is due to the high need of carbs by their muscles to sustain themselves. So they will borrow energy substrates from both their glycogen, aka carb reserves, and from their fat stores at like a 50-50 ratio, right? I'm just giving an example. Like, these are very, like, you know, generalized percentages, right? And let's say person B. Person B is like someone who has a high carb diet, not a low carb diet like person A. And they have, they also have a lot of muscle mass, and, you know, they also need a lot of immediate energy as well. So remember when I said glycogen stores are the first in line to be depleted first? And, you know, you have, and when you have a high carb diet, well, you know, carbohydrate eventually turns into glycogen, and therefore you have a lot of glycogen to get through before your body starts utilizing fat. So this type of person, in comparison to person A, who is on a low-carb diet and a high-protein diet, will likely burn between, like, you know, just as an estimate, 80% carbs and 20% fat during a fasting period. This is why some people question, like, why do I gain weight during Ramadan? Well, depends what you've been eating, right?
Honestly, I think, I'm glad that you bring that up. I think it's a cultural thing too, right? Because, like, Islamically, we know that the Prophet, you know, he broke his fast with just, like, dates and milk. And, you know, he would eat very light. And, you know, he it wasn't that he was, like, you know, waiting for the sun to go down and then he would just binge eat. But I feel like a lot of cultures, it's like that's what they put so much emphasis on like the family gathering at the dinner table, like spending like 3 hours sitting at the dinner table, and it's like 9-course meals of, like, you know, here's the appetizer, then here's the main dish, then here's the dessert, then here's the fruit and nuts and this and that. And so it's like you end up spending, I mean, instead of people, I feel like, humbling themselves during this time of Ramadan, which is meant for that, right? It's meant for us to humble ourselves. Instead of that, like, by restricting what we eat and by restricting, like, you know, this, because there's a pleasure in that too, right? There's a pleasure in eating, eating when you want, eating what you want, things like that, right? But Ramadan forces us to restrict that pleasure. And as a result of that, we should be humbling ourselves. And so when you've got people in, you know, these cultures that are really emphasizing like, oh, eat more food. I had a conversation with someone, I can't remember, just the other day I was having a conversation and they were like, yeah, my parents are like, you know, oh, the it's time, like the sun is, you know, the Fajr time is coming, you know? So it's like during Sahur when they wake up in the morning, right? It's like, oh my God, like you only have you know, 20 minutes left to eat, like, you know, stuff your face, like more food. Like, you know, get as much in as you can, you know, and it's just like, you're not gonna die, you know. It's not like, oh my God, like if I didn't eat enough, like, okay, fine, maybe I'll be more hungry than normal or I'll be more thirsty than normal, but it's not gonna kill me not to like stuff my face during suhoor.
Well,
you know,
you can actually eat very little suhoor and you'll be fine if you eat the right macronutrient distribution, macros being protein, carbohydrate, and fat, right?
Yes. No, but honestly, I mean, I don't know. I think it just in general, because I know people who, like, aside from Ramadan, just like in general, right? People who go on like water fasts, or they go on like they do intermediate mm-hmm. fasting, just regularly in their everyday life, and you know, because of that, it like there are a lot of health benefits related to those things in general, mm-hmm. of course.
Oh yeah, for
but
sure.
They've found that like, oh, when they do that, it's like, I wouldn't say the less that they eat, obviously you have to eat a certain amount, but it's like the less that they're putting into their body, like the more energy that they have. Do you know what I mean?
Right, because what it ends up doing is it kind of like, think of your metabolism as like clockwork, right? You know, a lot of people say metabolism has speed, which is not true. Metabolism has direction. It has direction of mm-hmm. like glycolysis, gluconeogenesis, proteolysis, proteogenesis, whatever, right? So just like clockwork,
uh-huh.
if you throw something into one of the gears, the whole operation of the clockwork either slows down or stops completely, right?
Mm-hmm.
So by fasting, you're kind of revamping that clockwork to be more efficient. You're kind of, you know, reconfiguring your hormones that regulate your metabolism to different baseline levels and achieve a new homeostatic normal. Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those are definitely the benefits of it. So, and people who do this often tend to have a really efficient metabolism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
So, I just want to say, like, anyway, as like a general rule, no matter your body type, glycogen stores in your liver, aka your carb reserves, and the glycogen stores in your muscles, your carb reserves in your muscles, are considered immediate energy, and they are the first in line to be depleted before anything else. You know, before your fat gets metabolized and breaks down, if you're trying to lose weight, before you lose muscle mass, the first thing to go is your carb reserves, aka your glycogen stores. And that is the first thing to be replenished as well, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so if you have a high carb diet, well, you know, you have a lot of glycogen to deplete, and some of the carbs left over won't have room to be stored as glycogen in your liver and your muscles. So guess what's going to happen?
It's going to store as fat?
It's going to store as fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens when you have a high carb diet, right?
Right.
And so basically, you know, let's think of it this way. So how does this relate to fasting, right? Remember I told you about this hormone called insulin?
Mm-hmm.
When blood sugar comes from glycogen, right? So there's a point in fasting, which I will eventually get to, that causes your body to break down glycogen stores and release them as glucose or sugar molecules into your bloodstream, so your blood sugar won't fall too low, and so that your bloodstream, aka the superhighway of your body, can deliver glucose as energy substrates to your organs and your muscles to sustain themselves, right? However, keep this in mind, when your insulin is high, it means your blood sugar is very high.
Mm-hmm.
It means your glycogen stores are so full and you have a lot of sugar in your blood looking to store itself somewhere, so it will likely store itself as fat, right? So if your suhoor is really carb rich,
mm-hmm.
while you have so much carb in your system that your glycogen stores are full, your bloodstream is full of blood sugar, that the rest of it doesn't know what to do with itself. So, you know, even though the idea is it's the first to deplete, well, you've put so much into your system that the opposite's going to end up happening. You're going to actually end up gaining weight and it's going to convert to adipose or fat tissue. Right.
I think that a lot of people don't, again, this is like a cultural thing, right? It's like, you know, people make like the heaviest foods, right? Thinking that, oh, it's Ramadan, like you know, you have to eat heavy to keep you full all day, right? Or they'll make like, you know, all these sweet dishes, like, you know, mom wants to cook everyone's favorite food. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of sweets, a lot of, right. You know, cakes, a lot of, so it's like, that's a problem too, isn't it? You know?
Oh yeah, like we know that most households do not care. Like, they just, you know, because they've been hungry all day. No, for sure.
Especially if you're like Middle Eastern or Asian, right? It's like, that's just how it is.
Yeah, no, that's how it was for me growing up in my household. We had stuff like biryani and samosas and, you know, all these different curries, and none of it was healthy. So.
No, none of it's healthy, for sure.
So, you know, I think this part will interest you. There are, remember how I said there are 4 stages of fasting?
Yes.
I'll only discuss 2 of them, since not all stages occur within the fasting period of Ramadan. But because I know some parts of the world, the fasting period can go up to 21, 23 hours, mm-hmm. I'll lightly touch on the 3rd stage of fasting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the first stage of fasting is called the fed state. Right, so this usually occurs within the first few hours when your body absorbs the food. So, like, you know, maybe like from the time you ate to 3 to 4 hours after you ate, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So during this state, your insulin levels are high, meaning your blood sugar is high, right? Uh-huh. And so this means your glycogen, aka your carb reserves, are either getting full or are already full, and then the rest of the carbs are looking to store themselves as fat.
Yes.
Right? Also, during this period, because your blood sugar levels increase and higher amounts of insulin are secreted, insulin is the hormone responsible for transporting sugar from your bloodstream into your cells, right? Mm-hmm. The amount of insulin released depends on the composition of your meal. So I cannot hit this point hard enough. You know, I'm trying to hit this point home. Your meals matter during Suhoor and Iftar.
Yes.
And the amount of carbs consumed and how sensitive your body is to insulin will dictate how your metabolism is going to go for the rest of your fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the extra glucose, you know, the sugar, which is stored in the liver and muscles as glycogen, that is your body's primary form of stored carbs, and it can be converted back into sugar as a source of energy as needed, right? So during this time,
mm-hmm.
Levels of other hormones, including leptin and ghrelin, also shift. So leptin is this hormone that controls hunger. It suppresses your hunger.
Mm-hmm.
Ghrelin is this hormone that makes you hungry,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning of the first few days of Ramadan, your leptin levels haven't adjusted yet. So, you know, the first few fasts are extremely hard because your leptin levels are so high, right? You're hungry all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But because, you know, after 30 days, your body readjusts, right? Your leptin levels fall and your ghrelin levels increase, meaning you no longer have much of an appetite and you're not able to eat as much. Also, the fact that you're like, your stomach contracts as well. So less room in your stomach, you naturally just eat less.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, ghrelin, remember, is the type of hormone that stimulates hunger, and its levels usually decrease right after you eat. Meanwhile, leptin, which is a appetite suppressing of has an appetite suppressing effect, is increased after eating, right? So we're still in the fed state here.
Yeah.
And note that the fast cycle resets back to the fed state as soon as food is consumed during a fast, right? So as soon as like iftar rolls around, you're back in the fed state,
right?
But this is like the first phase of fasting, the fed states, from the time you eat to 3 to 4 hours after you eat,
right?
And another important thing to note, the size and composition of your meal, like I said again, affect how long your body remains in the fed state. So if you had a carb-rich meal, you're going to be in the fed state for a long time. You're not going to be in the, you're not going to reach the fasting state, which is the desirable state if you're going to fast for a while. Which leads us to our second point, which is the fasting state. So the early fasting state usually starts from 3 to 4 hours post your last meal, and it can last up to 18 hours. This is why I said up to 18 hours, because the majority of the world probably only achieves the fed state and the fasting state during good Ramadan. But, you know, areas that are really north of the earth can go into the third stage too, which I'll get into. During this phase, your blood sugar and insulin levels start to decline, right? Which means, like, you know, your glycogen stores, aka your carb reserves, are starting to deplete, which is, like I said, is first in line to be sacrificed. And this causes your body to start converting glycogen into glucose to use as energy. Toward the end of this phase, right, your body will slowly run out of liver glycogen stores, aka your carb reserves, and start searching for another energy source. And do you know what that energy source is?
Fat.
Fat.
Yes, I did know that one.
Which is good, because when this happens, this intensifies lipolysis. Lipolysis meaning fat breakdown.
Right.
Which is, you know, a process in which triglycerides from fat cells are broken down into smaller molecules that can be used as an alternative source of fuel.
Right.
But you got to be careful. Your body can also convert amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. And you don't want to lose muscle mass, right?
Right.
So if your body starts using proteins for muscle and you don't have enough protein in your sahur meal, you can easily lose muscle mass as well. Right?
Right.
And oftentimes I've seen people complain where they gain fat and lose muscle. So fasting's a little tricky. You got to be really on the dot with your macros.
Yeah.
And here's the third stage, which, you know, if you're a listener who lives somewhere up where north in the world, like London or Calgary or Alaska or something like that, Norway, this applies to you. This does not apply to us towards the equator. You know, the third stage is called the fasting stage. The second stage was called the early fasting stage. The third stage is called the fasting stage. And this lasts from 18 hours to 2 days. And by this point, your glycogen stores in the liver have been completely and fully depleted. And your body begins breaking down protein and fat stores for energy instead, right? These are the people who, you know, will probably lose weight, end up losing weight guaranteed more than anybody else, because the fasting state is... it's intense. I'll say that. And then there's the fourth stage, which is called the long-term fasting state, also known as the starvation stage. And that typically occurs 48 hours of food intake. And, you know, that doesn't apply to us that fast during Ramadan.
Right.
Remember when I said, even though your carb reserves, aka your glycogen stores, are the first to deplete in your body?
Yes.
Well, this occurs in a ratio during the fasting state, right? It doesn't happen where your body is like 100%, it's going to deplete carbs first, and then your metabolism shifts to 100% fat burn, and then it shifts to 100% muscle breakdown or protein burn,
right?
That's not what it looks like. What it really looks like is, at first, you'll mostly burn carbs and a little bit of fat based on whatever ratio, dependent on several factors like lifestyle and the last meal you ate and genetics and muscle and fat mass. But when your carbs run out, right, or they're close to running out, then your metabolism shifts to where you mostly burn fat, which is achieved in the fasting state, which is the third state, and you burn a little bit of carb, right? So what I mean, the reason why this is important is, if you have a low protein diet, it can easily shift to burning mostly fat and protein and a little bit of carb. Like, you'll have an easier time doing that.
Right, makes sense.
I always recommend people to, if they eat sahur, as a general rule, every person's different, that if you're someone looking to lose weight or at least maintain your weight during Ramadan, you know, carbs
don't
are
eat,
important.
Don't eat all the shit mom's cooking for you.
Pretty much. You know, make sure that you eat very low carbs during iftar, but get a good amount of carbs during sahur. And the, because carbs aren't all bad, right? They're still your friend. Because, you know, if you eat carbs during sahur, well, you have the whole day to burn them off. And you eat just enough where they get fully depleted in the first state of fasting, which is the fed state.
Yeah.
But don't eat so much
yes.
that, you know, your fed state goes on too long. And then, you know, it's hard for you to get to the fasting state.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to lose weight, you gotta make sure that your sahur is very little to no carbs. And the reason why I say that is when you go to bed, right, your body is actually readjusting its metabolism. And, you know, you're sleeping. And gaining weight or losing weight usually occurs when you're asleep.
Yeah.
Muscle building occurs most when you're asleep, too. And because you're sleeping, you're fasting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want to make sure that you're breaking down fat while you sleep. Or at the very least, not gaining more fat. So that's usually my personal recommendation to people. But, you know, when it comes to metabolism, things are complicated.
Right.
Like, you can be doing everything right and not get the results you want.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, because when it comes to hormone configuration, if you're someone who is insulin sensitive, if you're someone who has, who was formerly overweight, right? People who were formerly overweight can easily gain the weight back and have the same exact diet as someone who was never formerly overweight, but the person who was formerly overweight will gain the weight back because their hormones, the baseline has like a lagging period between their new weight and when your metabolic hormones reconfigure themselves to the new baseline of your new weight. There's like a you have to keep the weight off for like 2 years for your hormones to be reconfigured in a way where you don't just gain the weight back so quickly.
That's really interesting. I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. But yeah, interesting stuff.
Maybe give some examples of some good iftar and sahur meals.
So, you know, my sahur meal is a protein shake and some eggs. Sounds super simple because I'm someone who has been on like my paleo journey for a few years now. And I can't even tell you the last time I had a can of Coke. But what I do personally is I take some protein powder, you know, which usually has about like 20 grams of protein in it, which is good. I would always recommend that people usually get about 20 grams of protein every meal. And, you know, I put in spinach, flax seeds, which is high in fiber. And mind you, carbs are the thing that make you feel full the most, right? They have a different effect on your body. Like protein can kind of make you feel full. If you have a high fat diet, like you'll feel full for a little bit, but then you'll be hungry real quick again. But carbs are the most satiating macronutrient out there, right? So the trick is you can have a high carb meal, but make sure the carb is in the form of fiber, which is an indigestible carb, meaning the microvilli in your intestines do not pick it up. It flushes out through your body, and that's why you get soft poop.
Mm-hmm.
Because the carbs didn't make it into your bloodstream, and, you know, basically you pooped it out. And you'll feel full longer because it sits there in your stomach for a while, and it's very slow to digest through your digestive system, and it does not get absorbed into your bloodstream. And then I also put lots of fruits in there, which are also high in fiber. Like I put strawberries, blueberries, things like that. And, you know, the almond milk, which is usually low in everything. Low in carb, fat, and protein. And then by, you know, suhoor time, I make sure I have almost no carbs whatsoever. So I usually have something like another smoothie and something that is a little bit high in healthy fats, which is eggs, avocado, and yeah, smoothie.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much what it looks like for me. Very simple, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds healthy. I think that that's really cool. I think that that's, you know, definitely people can take advantage of this opportunity to, you know, gain weight, lose weight if that's their goal. Maybe you can talk a little bit about like good timings to work out if somebody doesn't want to stop their workout routine.
Oh, right. Well, I still work out, but I work out right before iftar. It's really hard to do it the first week, I will admit. But the benefit is that at least I get to eat after my workout, right before iftar. And I don't have like a limit on the duration of how long I have to eat it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? I can eat it in tiny pieces. I can take my time. I don't feel rushed. And you know, after a workout, you're so tired, mm-hmm. right? Like, you definitely don't want to be rushed when you're eating. And that's, you know, if I were to work out right around before suhoor, I feel like I'm going to have to rush my workout and rush my eating too.
Exactly.
And not really be satisfied.
Yeah. I mean, I know people that work out when they, shortly before breaking their fast, but I also know people who will work out like at night, right? So like after they do the tahajjud or the taraweeh prayers, then they go to like the gym in the middle of the night, like 24-hour fitness or whatever, and go work out at mm-hmm. night, and then come home and then have iftar, which is also I think a pretty cool way of doing it too. I don't know which one's gonna give you like which one's gonna be easier. I really have no idea. I think that they're both extremely effective, depending on what you're eating. Yeah, I think that there's ways to definitely take advantage of this time to be healthy, but I think it's important not to allow it to some people, how do I say this? Some people, what they do is they take, like they become like, they allow it to like be their sole purpose of Ramadan. You know what I mean? Like, oh, this Ramadan, my goal is to lose mm-hmm. weight and to work out a lot. And like by the end of Ramadan, like I'm going to have like, you know, I'm going to be in like a way healthier position. And it's like, well, that's cool and all, but that's actually not the focus of Ramadan. So I don't think that people should be like allowing that to like supersede the purpose of Ramadan, which is to become closer to Allah, to be reading Quran, to be making sure that, you know, engaging in a lot of dhikr, you know, to be making sure that you're reminding yourself of, you know, the things that you want to thank Allah for, the blessings that Allah has given you, right? So I think that the mm-hmm. moment that your goal of your health benefits, not health benefits, but your goal of like losing weight supersedes your, you know, religious, you know, I guess goals. In Ramadan, I think that's when it gets a little dangerous in that, not dangerous, but it's like questionable, you know, it's like just, well, you know, it's like prioritize. You need to prioritize, you know,
right.
What is the main thing you're trying to gain out of Ramadan? And that should be like a spiritual cleansing, for lack of a better word, I guess, you know, or a better term to phrase mm-hmm. it. But, you know, that should be step number one. And then step number two is, yeah, definitely getting healthy. Why not? I mean, fasting has so many health benefits in it. So, yeah, I do think that a second priority should be health benefits, but definitely the first priority should be your spiritual state, I guess.
Mm-hmm, your spiritual state. You know, my perspective, I agree with you, but I have a little bit of a different perspective. To me, I think of like Ramadan as like a month of like not only resetting what the metabolism of my body, because that will happen on its own if you do it correctly. Because the point of Ramadan is also not indulging, right? It's about self-control.
Yeah, of course.
So
yes.
To me, I think, okay, this is a perfect opportunity for me to hone in on being disciplined in every aspect of my life. Whether it's my health, my spirituality, you know, my other routines that I do throughout the day, you know, just being on top of things and doing it in a fashion where I'm not living in a life of excess. mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I feel like each Ramadan throughout my life has taught me a lesson in which I have given up something for the next Ramadan, you know? Ramadan, I think 6 years ago, I, like, gave up rice. As like, I didn't give up rice completely, but I gave it up as a habit,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I told myself that Ramadan, I'm not going to eat rice because it's not healthy. I'm not going to indulge during iftar into rice because it's just not healthy for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kept up with it. Like, it's not part of my lifestyle. No,
that's a really good point. I think that because they say that it's, like, 30 days to build a habit, right? So it's, like, if you're mm-hmm. if anyone's trying to build, like, a healthy habit in regards to, like, maybe cutting out more sugars or maybe, I don't know, like, you know, making sure that you're working out every single day or, I don't know, waking up early or whatever it is, whatever habit you're trying to build, you know, doing it for 30 days during this Ramadan is a really, really great way to, like, mm-hmm. kickstart that.
Definitely. I totally agree. But that's just, like, the nutritional benefits of Ramadan, right? Like, there's a lot of benefits in so many regards, whether it's, like, a spiritual habit, right? This Ramadan, I made it a goal of,
mm-hmm.
like, even, like, you know, we, every Ramadan, like, I go, like, we learn the Quran in Arabic, right? We go through the whole Quran in Arabic
mm-hmm.
During Taraweeh prayers. Some people read it on the side, what have you. They read it on their own with the physical book in their hands. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm not someone who's a native Arabic speaker. This language does not come natural to me. And, you know, when I pray, I don't even know what mm-hmm. I'm saying. Or at least I don't know what I'm saying off the top of my head. A lot of the times I know what, like, a certain dua is. Like, I know what it's about, but I don't know what it says line mm-hmm. by line. So, you know, for this Ramadan, I bought the English translation of the Quran. Because I was like, well, you know, the Arabic version is going to be read aloud during Taraweeh anyways. So let me make it a goal for me to go through the book on the side in English. So this time, next Ramadan around, like, I have a good idea of what is being recited or at least what it's about.
Yeah, I think that that's really cool that you did that. And we've actually talked about this before, I think, you know, and I've mentioned to you before that, you know, people who are, like, indoctrinated into the religion, you know, at a very young age, we learn the surahs, right? Like, Al-Fatiha is, like, you know, one of the first ones, and the four mm-hmm. quls are usually, like, one of the first ones, right? Al-Kawthar, right? So it's, like, there are certain surahs that you'll learn at a very, very young age, and then it's, like, that's kind of the end of it, basically. It's, like, you know, you don't really... it's like you learn, sorry, it's not the end of it, but it's like you learn it in Arabic and then, like, that's it. You're just kind that's of like, it. Oh, I know that one, right? It's like not very many people then as they get older will then delve into understanding, well, what does the surah actually mean? Like, what is it that I'm actually saying when I pray, right? Like, what am I asking? You know, what am I, you know, what is the purpose of the surah, both on a historical kind of realm, as well as a, because every surah came down at a certain time in the Prophet's life, you know, and that's relevant, right? Like, when this surah came down in history, based on what the Prophet was going through, is very much so relevant in what needs to be taken into consideration for what this surah is trying to teach us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so not only that, but also the direct translation, right? Like, what is the, and not only the translation, but also the transliteration, where it's like, okay, well, these specific words in Arabic have this kind of root, and because it has this kind of root, then it's actually referring to this, as opposed to, you know, understanding it from this perspective if you had a different kind of root in this language. Does that make any sense? So, like, both the history, the translation, mm-hmm. and the transliteration are all very important to understand, and a lot of people don't take that step to do that. So, I mean, I'm so proud of you that you've done that. I think that that's amazing. Inshallah, you're able to finish the whole Quran in Ramadan. That would be really cool.
Well, I will say this, though. You know, Ramadan life is extremely hectic for me. Like, you know, trying to adjust your life around, like, when you can and cannot eat is very tough. And I'm sure that's the case with most people. So, like, I've made this goal for me to go through the English version of the Quran. But it's not just, like, any English. It's transliterated and translated where it's understandable to a common person.
Yes.
Right? Because I'm not someone who can understand Shakespearean or archaic English. And there's a lot of Qur'ans that are like that, where it is translated, but even the English is too tough to understand.
Yes.
So the one that I got is the Quran by M.A.S. Abdul Halim, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it not only offers an English translation in that is understandable to most English speakers, but it also offers like cliff notes on the side of the page where what the context is.
It gives a little bit of the history.
The history and the context behind it, so you can properly understand it. And for me personally, I read it sometimes too, like the actual physical book. But oftentimes I find myself, downloading the Amazon Audible version of it and listening to it in my car as I'm driving from point A to point B, because I'm trying not to listen to music anyways, and I gotta get through this book anyway, so why don't I just put on the Audible version of it and listen to that?
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. Maybe we should post a picture of the Quran that you have and put it on the Instagram for people to see the version of it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So if anyone's interested, we'll definitely have that up on our Instagram page.
Yeah, I think that I honestly support that a lot. I know people who, during Ramadan, like, they've got those goals of like, oh, I'm going to try to read the Quran at least once, or I know people who will read it twice or three times. I know people who, like you said, they stop listening to music, or I know people who will completely stop using social media. I know people who will completely stop talking to, like, they like go in a cave and like they stop talking to like all of their friends during Ramadan. I know people who like go out of their way to schedule their vacations on Ramadan so that they don't have to work. So I know a lot of people who will like definitely put the time aside to make sure that they have that like one-on-one time with Allah. And I think that it's really, really important to make it, and honestly, it doesn't have to be anything huge. If you're only if you're able to put, read 30 minutes or an hour of Quran a day, or maybe twice a day or something, it's like you'll finish it in the month. It's very, very much possible. And so I think a lot of people get a little intimidated. A lot of people think, if you want to read Quran, it has to be read in Arabic. I also think that that's a complete misunderstanding. You have to understand that the prophets were brought down, like, during the duration of history, there were hundreds of prophets, right? We don't even know all of them, but they were, it says in the Quran, we brought, every nation was given a prophet. So you think all of them spoke Arabic? No. Prophet Isa didn't speak Arabic, right? So it's like, mm-hmm.
He spoke Aramaic.
Yes, exactly. So don't assume that everything needs to be in Arabic. No, the prophets were brought down to all of the nations. They spoke all different languages. It's okay if you need to read a Quran in German or in Italian or in French or in Japanese. It's okay. Like, there's no lessening of the beauty of the Quran because you're reading it in a different language. I do not believe that there is. I believe that it's important for us to understand what's in the Quran, because that's a part of the religion, right? It's like believing in the book, believing in the prophet, and believing in Allah. Those are like the three main things, right?
Right. And for me personally, I'm not a parent. You are.
Yes.
If I were to have children, the way I would approach things is, I would have them learn it in English first, to be honest. But that's, I've gotten criticism on that before. And I just think that's what makes sense to me, because I'm someone who struggled with Islam growing up. And I just feel like if I was taught it in English first and within the right context, I would have had a different experience with my faith. And I wouldn't have struggled so much up until my early 20s if that had not been the case.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Everyone's different.
I know some people that they teach their children, like 2-3-year-olds, they teach it both in English and in Arabic. So, this was a few months back. A friend of mine, she had her daughter. Her daughter is, at the time, was, like, 2. She's, like, turning 3. But she recited to me Surah Al-Kawthar, right? Which is, like, the shortest surah in the Quran, right? She recited it to me in Arabic, and then right after, her mother was like, okay, now say it in English. And then she said it to me in English, which I thought was fucking cool. Like, that's awesome. You know, if at a very young age, like, you're taught both of them, then it's like, you know, whether it's in English or, again, any, whatever your native language is, if you learn it in the native language as well as in Arabic, that's really cool because you understand what it is that you're saying.
Pretty much. And then you don't feel so, like, lost all the time, you know? You know, and with this book, I think it's great because this translation version of it has cliff notes that do provide context of it. And oftentimes I find myself, okay, I'm reading this and I understand it, but why? Why mm-hmm. did this happen? What mm-hmm. is the context, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. why does the Quran say this? Like, please help me understand, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it is like Ramadan has been like a learning experience for me almost every year. And
alhamdulillah, year, that's great. I think that it should be that way. I think it should be that mm-hmm. way for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that too. And for me, I think to myself of like, there's so many people on this planet that can't fast and they feel so left out. And like, my mom is someone who should not be fasting, but she fasts anyway because she just refuses to feel like being left out. And yeah. I mean, that's why I think it's like a blessing because it puts people on this spiritual high. And if you make it a goal that you sustain your spirituality for a long time, because in a way it's about resetting habits, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm definitely
thinking. Yeah, and I appreciate you bringing up, you know, the people who can't fast, right? There are people who have like, for health purposes, they shouldn't be fasting, or for... I know that, you know, there are certain situations, like, for example, like, if you've got a surgery coming up, like, there are certain things that you should or shouldn't be eating or whatever. So there are people, and obviously for women, you know, our time of the month, we can't be fasting. So, you know, I think that when you're in that situation, I don't think that that means like, oh, you know, too bad for you, you're not getting the blessings. I think it's actually like, well, there are different ways to be spiritual, right? And it's you know, communicating with God in whatever you say, see, in whatever form that you see fit, but as well as, you know, dhikr, and obviously it's like intentions, remaining humble, right? Listening, you can listen to podcasts that are, in audible translation or transliteration, or even the Arabic Quran, like, you know, just listening to it. There's nothing wrong with that. There's so many different ways that you can remain like spiritually at least gaining something or profiting, you know, during this month. And it doesn't all, it's not always about, you know, being able to pray or being able to fast, right? So I think that that's important.
Pretty much, totally agree. And with that, we'll close out. Next week, we're going to be talking about if you're someone that's felt like you've lost your faith in Islam, or you're finding your way and you're finding yourself questioning things and what that journey looks like. And I'm here to tell you, if you're someone who's ever questioned Islam before, or has been critical of it, or has had some serious questions that people are hesitant to answering, I'm telling you, you're doing nothing wrong, and it's okay to question it. And we'll definitely be delving into that further next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You're going to be sharing some personal stuff as well, which I'm excited about.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Some personal stuff. I'm putting up myself to be eaten by some wolves out there, I'm aware. So if somebody comes at me, come
it's
at
okay.
me.
It's okay. It's okay, because you're in the safety environment of my and your own podcast, and it's just me and you during that conversation. Everyone, you know, we wish everyone a Ramadan full of blessings and forgiveness, and inshallah, you know, spiritual cleansing and coming closer to Allah, and opportunities, and, you know, hopefully doors are opening for all of us all over the world. And may Allah, you know, protect this ummah and make us strong, and you know, increase us in faith and give us Jannah. So, ameen.
Ameen. So, thank you all for joining us. Inshallah, you'll hear from us next week. Ramadan Mubarak.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.